And a warm welcome now to another longtime guest, Dr. Linda Yu. She is a fellow at St. Edmund's Hall, Oxford University, and an adjunct professor at London Business School. Professor Yu, it's so nice to have you back.
Good morning, Janet. It's always great to be with you.
So, Professor Yu, we've seen these dislocations in so many asset classes around global markets, and the dollar is one of those that's being so closely watched, right? It's been on a decline, some questioning whether it could potentially lose reserve currency status. How likely is that? Is that just sort of chatter on the internet that we shouldn't be paying attention to?
It's a really good question. I always think there's always some truth to when people start to speculate, because the decline of the dollar, as you rightly say, since the announcement of the tariffs about a month ago now, was a bit of a surprise, because I think in many ways the expectation was, we expected the tariffs. It's just something that President Trump said he would do in the election trail. And so the decline of the dollar in reaction to that, I think, is really worth thinking about. And I think some of the reasons why it's so important is because the United States, having this position as a global reserve currency, there are other reserve currencies like the euro, but none of them have this position in the U.S. It allows Americans to borrow rather cheaply. So it's what the French president, I'm going to butcher his name, but Valéry Giscard d'Estaing, described as America's exorbitant privilege. So I think this is why during times of stress, oftentimes the dollar actually gets, it strengthens. So I think they're now another factor contributing to, I think, thinking about where the value of the dollar should be. It's actually triggered by the chair of President Trump's Council of Economic Advisers, Stephen Miron. So he's written a couple of pieces where he's actually been concerned about the strength of the dollar. So the stronger the dollar, the cheaper it is to buy imports, and exports from the U.S. are more expensive. They're less competitively priced. So he has been suggesting that the dollar is too strong, and that's one of the reasons for why the U.S. has had a current account deficit, which is a deficit in its external trade position for decades. So I think that has caused some to begin to think about if the U.S. is not really happy with the strength of the dollar, and if the if we're going to continue to see tariffs because of this deficit, then is there something about the strength of the dollar that we should all be watching out for? I mean, the dollar is a free-floating currency, so I think everything I described is around how investors perceive and how policymakers might speak about the currency, but ultimately it is still a function of demand for U.S. assets. So I guess one of the things to consider is some of the work, the research has been done on this, is by economists, economic historians, who say that if the U.S. withdraws from the global stage, so really turns inward, then you could find a sizable 30 percentage point reduction in the share of the dollar that's held in the reserves of basically U.S. Trade states, countries that trade with the U.S. That would mean it would be less demand for U.S. Assets, less demand for U.S. debt, and that would actually make borrowing costs a bit higher for Americans. So I think that's just one scenario worth thinking about. I think fundamentally, the dollar, you rightly asked, is there a real risk? There's no real alternative to the dollar because the euro doesn't have the same depth as treasuries or T-bills or U.S., basically U.S. government debt. So at the moment, probably no. But everything that I just described means I think we could see more volatility in the dollar while people try and work out where they think the right value should be, given everything that's been going on. But I do think it's one of those things where you have to be slightly careful for what you wish for, because if the dollar starts to lose its position as a global reserve currency, it might be more expensive to fund American borrowing, which goes into investments as well as consumption.
We're in conversation with Professor Linda Yu, fellow in economics at St. Edmund Hall, Oxford University, and adjunct professor at London Business School. And Professor Yu, I wanted to talk about another of the concerns that people have right now with these dislocations that are occurring in recent months, and that is emerging markets, many developing countries starting to form stronger trade relationships amongst themselves as a bulwark against the big hegemons, you know, the U.S., the China, their trade wars. Tell us about this recent development, whether it's something that should concern us.
Yeah, this is, I think, really fascinating work that the World Bank has just released. So they track a group called Emerging Markets and Developing Economy. So this is basically three quarters of the countries of the world, because about a quarter of the world's countries are high income. So this is the bulk of the world's countries. So they find that more than half of these countries actually trade more with each other than with advanced economies, including the United States. And this is the statistic that I find fairly staggering, is that if you think back to the year 2000, only about a quarter of countries traded more with other emerging markets than they did with advanced economies. So advanced economies tend to be the richer, bigger, more established consumer markets, so the U.S., Western Europe. So this is really quite a remarkable shift, where you find emerging markets are, well, they're selling more to each other than what we think of as traditional consumers. And in fact, even before the set of U.S. tariffs, the World Bank says the amount of goods that they were shipping has been growing faster to each other than to advanced economies like the United States. So if you do find that trade flows have shifted away from advanced economies, then I think that in some ways is an indication for companies that may find that the U.S. market is quite volatile. You don't really know how much your good is going to cost by the time it arrives on U.S. shores. This suggests there could be other markets, other trade corridors to pivot to, which may be worth considering. So another way of thinking about it is there's a lot, as you rightly point out, trade dislocations right now. So if you think about trade like water, so there's a lot of trade happening. Companies, you know, all around the world are producing things and looking for markets to sell. If it's like water, then when you have one path that looks a bit challenging or rocky, water doesn't really stop. It just gets diverted into other pathways. So I think that's the pattern that we're beginning to see. Where I found it really interesting is because we traditionally, I think there's still really no replacement for the size of the U.S. market. But it does look like there's certainly enough demand that emerging markets are finding other places to sell to. And the change in just from the year 2000 tells you this predates you know, the current round of U.S. tariffs. So trade flows, this water, it looks like it's moving differently around the world. And I think if we continue to have a lot of uncertainty in the U.S. trade position, we could find this this gets accelerated. So I think that's an opportunity for companies, but actually also a challenge for advanced economies like the U.S. if they want to continue to be a major trading nation.
Linda, very quickly, I wanted to touch on one last subject, and we have just 2 minutes left. And this is the issue of AI chatbots sort of supplanting search, right? And the challenge to Google from Gen AI. But we haven't really seen that hurt Google or its parent company, Alphabet, yet. They've had another blowout quarter. Talk to us about this. Talk to us about what, you know, search firms and so forth, marketing firms are doing to help alleviate some of that concern.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating. So there was a report out by the consultancy Bain. 80% of consumers actually use ChatGPT or one of the others, you know, Claude or Perplexity AI for 40% of their searches. So that suggests, instead of going to Google, you're opening up an app. So I use Perplexity AI. You type in your question and it gives you not just the, it doesn't give you a ranking of different websites. It gives you the answer with references. You can click on those references. So I think this is a real challenge to Perplexity AI is a startup that I should mention. Their whole business model is to challenge Google. So it's, I think it reflects a couple of things. One is Gen AI, people are looking for a different set of answers. And the second thing is you can verify what they're saying by clicking on the references. And I think that is potentially a challenge. You're right. We don't currently see it in terms of Google, Google's demand for Google. But I think it's enough of a challenge that I think some of these existing search companies are being offered products to try and place trying to create their own Gen AI chatbots or apps in order to counter this. And certainly there are companies which are now trying to see what they can do to do sponsored answers in Gen AI. I just think this is a fascinating space to watch because I know my own searches have shifted and I'm not an early adopter. So I just think we definitely should watch this.
Absolutely. Professor Yu, thank you so much for joining us today. Remind us again where we can follow you and your work.
Always a pleasure, Janet. You can find me, my handle on social media is at Linda Yu, LindaYueh. And you can also find me on my website, www.lindayu.com.
And that's Linda Yu, fellow in economics at St. Edmund Hall, Oxford University, and adjunct professor at London Business School. It's been a pleasure bringing you all of the news of the day again today and taking your calls. Our phone lines